how far I was leading myself down the rabbit hole. I started lying. I started cheating. I started betraying the people I love. I started doing everything we do as compulsive gamblers. You can look at my bank statements when I was actively gambling in one day. I mean, I could print off probably 10 to 15 pages of transactions. I lost my job. I lost my reputation. I almost lost my husband. This particular doctor looked at me. I was in very active at this point. He turned and said, "You know, I think you should sleep it off. I don't believe that you are going to kill yourself tonight."
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the One Day at a Time podcast. Today's guest is Megan S. from the Ontario area. Today, we're going to be talking about her story of gambling addiction and recovery and what she's doing right now to give back to the recovery community. Megan, thank you so much for joining.
Thanks for having me.
Course. And, we were just chatting a little bit before the recording session to go through your story. And I think that a few things that pop out are going to be ones that a lot of people can unfortunately relate to in terms of the reasons that you were going to gambling, in terms of the feeling that it was providing. I'm really thankful that you're here because these are stories that we haven't really touched on yet, though I imagine they're unfortunately quite common. So let's dive into it. How do we get here today?
So gambling has always kind of been something present in my family, not to a problematic point, but we always used it as an entertainment value. I can remember, being pretty young up until 5 or 6, even 4, visiting my grandparents in Fort Lauderdale, and we go to the dog tracks, we go to the racetracks, we go to Jai Alai. Became very normal as far as something for the kids in my family. Moving towards, my adolescence, I had severe struggles and some mental issues that I was able to suppress in my own mind, was able to always deal with by myself, never really wanted to ask for help. I had loving parents, loving father, a loving mother, but I definitely had a tumultuous relationship with my mother, as many daughters and mothers do. Always found a need to be independent and always find a need to try and deal with things myself. Moving forward into canine of my 20s and 30s, gambling was present, but it was more something we did just for celebration, a birthday, an anniversary, something along those lines. And I really enjoyed doing it, to be honest. Didn't really become problematic until my mother became ill and passed away. She battled cancer for quite some time in three different types. And her numbness, her ability to medicate herself was really gambling. Something where she could escape, where she could fall into this place where she didn't have to worry about anything or anything except for feeding that machine that was enabling her to feel numb, not face reality and look inwards towards her own struggle and reach out to people. I did much the same. I turned to online gambling, and at first, again, something that I enjoyed to do, something I wasn't necessarily truthful about, but didn't become problematic until realistically the day she passed away. I can remember her last words to me. They weren't, "I love you." They weren't, "I'm proud of you." It was good luck. And in the moment, those words really crushed me. I was always seeking approval, love, not that she didn't provide it to me, but something that I felt I lacked from her. And was trying to find a connection in the end and decided that I could turn to something that I felt she loved, that I felt that was something that was numbing her pain. And that was kind of what broke the camel's back. The day she died, I think I probably dropped $500 in 2 minutes. And that self-medication feeling, that dopamine, that numbness was all I needed. I just went with it. I couldn't really realize how far I was leading myself down the rabbit hole, and really creating more problems than avoiding them. And I started lying. I started cheating. I started betraying the people I love. I started doing everything we do as compulsive gamblers. And we suffer in silence. It's super easy to get into that place where you can hide anything and everything. You become a master of lies. We don't have something tangible to hold. We don't have a bottle. We don't have a needle, but we have the lies. We have the stories. And we have those machines. My phone became, a tool of destruction. I started getting worse and worse, getting further and further into debt. And at one point, I started taking money. I couldn't stop. I knew I was doing something wrong, but physically, I couldn't stop myself because I knew it was either numbing my pain or going down a further route of suicide. You know, my suicidal thoughts were always there, very present from early teen to realistically 6 months ago. Now I know that I left breadcrumbs. I don't think I could have ever screamed up to the mountains and shouted that I need help. I don't think I ever could have told my truth. I think I left those breadcrumbs to get caught. Now that I was caught, I knew that I was going to shatter my family. I knew I destroyed anything and everything that the perception of people had of me that was good was now gone. But in my story, it was life or death. It's my responsibility to take accountability for my actions because that can't be something I blame on addiction. But it's also my responsibility to raise awareness and be that voice who can be loud and recover loudly to make sure people don't follow in my footsteps.
I appreciate you being here and for setting the scene for us. And once again, sorry for your loss. When my grandmother passed away around a similar time as your mother passed away back in 2020, I immediately took to online sports betting, like in the aftermath of it. It was less of a connection between her and gambling, but for me, it was still at that point like my mechanism for feeling better, for how I'd spend my time. And so I know the exact feeling of going through something that's traumatic or terrible happening and then turning around and, gambling to get away from it. Now, you had mentioned that you left some breadcrumbs throughout this trail in order to get caught, in order to find help. Would you be able to share what some of those were?
I hid things as far as being present. I hid things by gambling in the bathroom, by gambling in my bedroom, by gambling anywhere and everywhere I could, because in this day and age, the accessibility is there and it's there for a reason. It's there to grab us, it's there to hold us, and it will never let us go. Now that I reflect on it, I made sure that what I was doing, what I was taking, was visible for people as long as they were looking for it. I never really did things to a point where, don't get me wrong, I did awful things. I was an awful person, and I keep that person very close to me because I need always to know that that ability to be that awful person is in me. And I will never forget what I did or who I was because that helps me recover. That helps me heal every day to realize that I can no longer be that person and I am no longer that person. Those breadcrumbs were left so one day when someone finally looked a little bit deeper or dove a little bit deeper into certain things, that there would be questions, there would be things that would be approached in such a way where I would have no other way out other than to admit that I had a problem and I was doing these things.
And a lot of people that are listening likely haven't yet hit a point where they're thinking about or attempting a crime in order to fund their gambling. What was your justification in taking the money? Did you believe that you were a bad person doing it, or did you believe that you were going to put it back?
There was never a point where I hadn't convinced myself that I would put it back. There were certain circumstances that kind of aligned where one thing was said, and I could take that and move towards using a little bit of truth in a big lie. I almost stopped telling stories to others, stopped telling those lies to others, and started to believe my own lies, started to believe my own stories where I would convince myself where one day I would hit that big win. One day I would do what I could to put it back because that was what was going to happen. I felt that that was my fate. And I know now I wasn't chasing money. I wasn't chasing a big win. I was chasing the ability to do anything and everything to self-medicate myself so I wouldn't turn to suicide. So I wouldn't turn to taking my own life and leaving my family and my loved ones behind. I have a lot of help now. And unfortunately, I helped a lot of people prior to being caught. I've always been an empath, I think. I think a lot of people have gravitated to me. And throughout recovery and throughout my support systems, a lot of us in the same boat as compulsive gamblers have the same characteristics. We've always put people first. We always do things for others to make us either feel good or realistically allow ourselves to make amends within ourselves by saying, I've done so many good things for other people, I deserve this. And I don't think at any point we realize that the consequences to our actions can be devastating. But as long as you face those consequences head on, and as long as every day you're working towards a better version of yourself, you can get out of it. You can become better and you can make a difference.
Can we talk about something real for a minute? If your gambling has started to feel less like fun and more like stress, trust me, you're not alone. Millions of us know what it's like to say, just one more bet, or feel that urge that's really difficult to explain. That's why I'm excited to tell you about Evive, a sponsor of today's video. Think of it as having a recovery companion right in your pocket, someone who actually understands what you're going through. No lectures, no pressure, just practical tools and genuine support when those challenging moments hit. Download Evive now and you'll get guaranteed free access through 2026. Not a trial or a limited version, but the complete platform, completely free. Because Evive believes that everyone deserves access to support that works for them. Download Evive today and take the first step towards changing your relationship to gambling. Evive is only available in select countries. To a certain extent, I was doing things that I knew were objectively good things, like for others, but I was doing them for myself. And
100%.
even going back to like the start of this YouTube channel was a selfish action. It was that when I made content trying to help someone else, it made me feel good about myself and made me feel like I was doing something to contribute. Now, that doesn't mean that it is a bad thing, but
No.
that thought in the beginning, like I can relate to that. It's morphed into something else at this point, but yeah, it's like we do a lot of justifying in our heads. But I have a colleague that I work with named Dr. Michelle Malkin, and one of her initiatives in the United States is trying to push forward gambling courts, gambling addiction courts, because we have drug courts where a first-time offender who's used drugs and develops an addiction commits a crime. There's more leniency in their sentencing because they're recognizing they were doing things out of desperation. We don't have that with gambling. So there's countless stories of people embezzling money from work or stealing from family or friends or colleagues, going to jail for it, when in reality, what you just said was you weren't doing it because you wanted to get rich. You were doing it because you felt like you had to. So you're a perfect case for why we need a court like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's really important for us as addicts to admit what we've done. And I think part of the healing process is that you have to realize that there's consequences to your actions. I can't lean on to the fact that I had an addiction, but I can be a story to open the conversation about how something this heavy. We have the highest suicide rates. We live in silence, we suffer in silence, and have such a stigma behind it that it's very hard to shed that shame. It's very hard to move forward and feel as though, regardless of what you do, as far as good, as far as drive, as far as the work, such as yourself, to raise that awareness of people that are going to come out of the woodworks in drones, very, very, in very short term because of the new legislation across the board, across the world. And there's just not enough research behind it. But I agree. There definitely needs to be a bigger conversation legally, scientifically, financially. There's too many claws, there's too many hands in the pot, and there's too many people that are profiting off of what they say is the 5% of gamblers who are problematic. But I would implore everyone to kind of inwardly think about how much we can't come out and say we have a problem. Usually until it's too late, those numbers of, 5% of gamblers are problematic gamblers, I would highly disagree with the amount of people I see daily coming into these support systems that I'm a part of, that number is probably closer to, that 40%.
Yeah, it's definitely an underreported metric. For those in the audience that aren't aware of what these numbers are, 5% is like this often cited number of what percentage of gamblers are problem gamblers. I think that more realistically, 5% of gamblers are like extreme problem gamblers. Then there's the other 30 to 40% of people who are gambling in a way that's problematic. Those
100%.
numbers don't get reported. One last thing is like, When you look at the definition of a crime, it gets broken down into means, motive, and opportunity. And so the means and the opportunity are usually pretty clear in a case like embezzling during problem gambling. But what's so unclear is the motive. Like when I think of a crime, I think of someone doing something bad for self-gratifying reason, right? We're doing something bad because we want to get rich. We're doing something bad because we want revenge. Like there's lots of different reasons someone would commit a crime, but self-preservation shouldn't be a crime. And that's where I think we need to draw the line. If you're reaching that point in your mind where if you're not able to place a bet, you think that you'd rather leave the earth, that is a massive failing on the mental health counseling side, on the public health side. And we shouldn't be punishing someone as a criminal for decades of incarceration because of it. Another thing about gambling in society, before we got on this call, you told me one of probably the most alarming things I've ever heard, which was that someone that you know tried to self-exclude from a casino and something ridiculous happened. Would you be able to tell that story for the audience?
Yeah, of course. I'm lucky that I have a lot of people in my life through this recovery process that I've made connections with. And someone very close to me self-excluded on a Canadian website and had been online gambling for a significant amount of time. They had, I think, approximately 24 to 48 hours once that self-exclusion request got put in for it to actually go through. Within 2 minutes of self-excluding, this particular online gambling establishment called Casino put $2,000 in his account just to see if he wanted to change his mind.
It's like when you try to cancel a subscription that is way overpriced, and then they say, hold on, we'll give it to you for half the cost. It's like almost like the casino in this case was just begging for him to stay in business. But what's alarming is for someone that doesn't know, a self-exclusion is when you ban yourself from playing at that establishment. So this person in question was trying to stop themselves from gambling more. And they had to wait 48 hours to find out if that was going to go through. And in the meantime, given $2,000 of free play to tempt them to keep playing.
Don't kid yourself. I mean, for everyone that's listening, there is a huge, huge organization that employs multiple people to change and disrupt and recoup. People like me, people like Rob, people who are trying to recover from this insidious disease by dangling carrots, by disrupting support groups, by doing anything and everything they can to get the people who are spending an obscene amount of money to come back and ruin their lives even more. The fact that they have no accountability, the fact that there is no rules, regulations they need to follow because there's too much government greed in them, is just absolutely disgusting.
When I talk about topics like this, what often happens is someone in the audience will say, no, you're just mad because you lost. You're mad because you came out the loser and you sucked at gambling and that's why you lost. But it's like, I really want to paint this picture that it's not 100% on the casinos, the development of a gambling addiction, but it's not 0%. And things
100%.
like this are causing such a massive problem because once that self-exclusion period starts, correct me if I'm wrong, it might be different in Canada, it becomes illegal for them to be contacted by that casino.
Correct. Yes.
So their solution was to basically do what's called a reverse withdrawal, except with a self-exclusion request, and make you wait to find out if it's okay that you're getting banned from their casino. That's insane. And I want to talk about the recovery as well to end things on a more positive note. But before we get there, there's a question that I ask sometimes that most people don't really have a clean stance on, but I'm imagining that you might. So I want to ask you this question. One of the things that the casino industry uses to basically maintain their current marketing strategy, their current outreach, is by saying that if they can remind people to gamble responsibly, they can take the onus off of themselves and put it onto the player. What is responsible gambling?
So, in my opinion, I don't think we can really say there's anything as responsible gambling right now. We can not even really say there's anything as responsible drinking, for example, if you want to make that correlation. But when it comes to gambling, here's my questions. You can't call it responsible if you are not building and providing education at a young age of the harm of what this can do, especially now that it is heavily online. People don't start to go down a rabbit hole and start to deteriorate in a small amount of time. If you're not educating children, if you're not educating even adolescents or adults, that in a second, not 2 weeks, not a year, not 5 years down the road, these are going to be your physical problems, mental problems, financial problems. You can lose everything in an instant. It takes less than 5 minutes for you to lose it all, right? And if we're not educating our youth, if we're not educating people to have that understanding, and if every single organization, from the casino to the financial institutions to our healthcare system, and realistically to what they call in Canada the players' support, aren't working as a combined unit, you can't use those words together.
Gambling can absolutely wreck your finances, but you don't have to fix it alone. At Gamfin, they help people struggling with gambling debt to take back control. Whether it's budgeting, debt management, or rebuilding your financial future, their experts are here with real solutions. No judgment, just support. Your money doesn't have to define you. Visit gamfin.org today and take the first step toward financial recovery by meeting with one of their financial advisors. Hope starts here. When we look at something like alcohol, we don't see people enraged with Budweiser. We don't see people enraged with like Smirnoff because of their marketing and their campaigns. When they say drink responsibly, you know, that's dumb, whatever. But you can theoretically argue, right? Okay, if I have a 0.09 BAC, I can't drive a car. The doctors recommend not having more than 3 to 6 drinks a week per this weight, per this BMI. It's subjective. But there's at least things to talk about. When it comes to gambling, there's nothing. They say
Correct.
gamble responsibly. I don't know if that means bet half my money, bet 1% of my money, bet one time a week, one time a month. Like there's no explanation. It's, oh, well, you would know what it is for you. No, I don't. That's why I'm in Gamblers Anonymous. Like, what the hell are you talking about?
100%. And I mean, when it comes down to it, we don't have enough research. The WHO just released, I believe in January 2025, their first fact sheet about how they believe online gambling and gambling as a whole is going to become an epidemic. There's not enough conversation. There's not enough systems put in place to provide that whole. And because, like you say, there's no measurement, there's nothing that changes in our physical bodies, with the exception of our dopamine and how our brains kind of rewire for that fight or flight portion once we're heavily into that addiction where we feel the need. What are we going to do? Are we going to put something on our heads to map what our brains are doing at every given time, to at every given moment? Like, and when someone walks into the casino or gets on their phone, are they expected to put in their levels of dopamine? And once they hit that, then it becomes problematic because they're trying to get that. No, you can look at my bank statements when I was actively gambling heavily in 1 day. I mean, I could print off probably 10 to 15 pages of transactions, as opposed to now, where one page of my bank transactions are for a month. You know, I was a VIP. I was someone who had a higher level of membership, they would call it. And I would get bonuses. I would get these offers. I would get this. Did one time this individual say to me, you know, I've noticed in the last hour you have deposited, let's say, 20 to 30 transactions. I think you need to take a break. We're going to step away from that. I believe that that's their responsibility. But we have to take responsibility as gamblers for our own actions as well. We don't have safeties in place. As you said, we don't have that waitress to cut us off and provide us a glass of water if we're too heavy into it. We don't have ride checks. We don't have a bouncer checking our ID. There's just so much unknown about this particular addiction and this disease that if the conversation doesn't happen at a government level, at a mental health level, at a medical level, we are just going to find ourselves in hell, to be honest.
And I think in my opinion, the best illustration of what you just said can be found in the marketing materials of these casinos. If we look at another place where you can lose your money, the stock market, we see financial institutions that advertise are really held to a really high level of liability. They have to put this giant disclaimer on everything they put out that says, if you invest in this product or with us, you could lose your money. And then the gambling one says, hey, fuck up. Call us if you have a problem.
Yeah, agreed.
So I
Agreed.
think that's a pretty clear showing of what you just said. So before the call, you had mentioned to me that there was this insane amount of profit coming into the province that you're living in, but very little going to actually helping problem gamblers. This is pretty standard across the board, but just to kind of illustrate it, what were those numbers so that the audience can understand the just ridiculousness of the situation?
Yeah, so now you're going to get different numbers across the board, but approximately 490 million were profits that went back into government last year from gambling. Of those profits, the government in Canada provided 0.087% back into the support systems that they have in order to help problematic gamblers, in order to educate people not to go down that route. Our Minister of Tourism and Travel and Culture has now been deemed our Minister of Tourism, Culture and Gaming. This is something that's not going to stop without voices, without advocacy, and without a knowledge base in order to hold the government accountable for what they're doing.
And the worst part about that is probably, and I'm not in Canada, so I'm just going to guess, but it's what happens here. They brag about the fact that they put money back into treatment.
100%, every single second commercial for OLG, which is Ontario Lotto Gaming Commission, is that they support communities, that they put money back into school programs, into sports programs, into anything and everything that doesn't have to do with the beast that they're creating when it comes to gambling.
Let's tie this back into a more positive ending for the people. What made you stop gambling, and what are you doing now to maintain your own recovery?
Sure. So on August 9th, 2024, I was caught. I was approached and I lost my job. I lost my reputation. I almost lost my husband. I was brought to him, and in that moment, I had to tell whatever truth I could. At that moment, it wasn't the whole truth. I didn't have it within me to really dive into everything, but I told him what he needed to know. And I thought I was going to lose him. I probably should have lost him, and I am full of gratitude and thankful every day that the man I love and the man I married is someone who stood by my side, because I wouldn't be on this earth if that wasn't the case. I went to the emergency room, and the doctors aren't equipped with knowledge as far as mental health is concerned. They're equipped to provide what a prescription they feel is necessary and move on. So this particular doctor looked at me. I was in very active suicide at this point, and he turned and said, "I think you should sleep it off. I don't believe that you are going to kill yourself tonight, and you can call CMHA, which is Canadian Mental Health, in the morning." We did not accept that. We went to another emergency room the next day, saw a crisis counselor, saw a crisis therapist. I was assessed, had an opportunity to check myself into the psych ward. Did not do that because I was at such a high level of mental health crisis in Canada. They push you forward. So I was able to obtain an addiction counselor, a crisis counselor, a crisis therapist. But what saved my life was the rooms. Was the community. There are fellowship groups that are available everywhere, online and in person, and no one's going to understand you the way another compulsive gambler understands you. So I immersed myself in these rooms. I went to a meeting a day. I couldn't get out of bed some days. I couldn't shower. I had ruined my life and the lives around me, and I didn't know how I was going to come out of this. And how I came out of it was starting to realize that The more I put myself first, the more I started paying attention to my mental health and what brought me to make these awful decisions, the more I started to realize that maybe the connections I was building, maybe the support I had was going to bring me to a place where I could hold my head up again. I started wanting to have an understanding of not necessarily why I gambled, but why I did some of the things I did. So I started reaching out to non-for-profits in Canada. My in-person meeting in Canada, I had to drive about 1 hour and 20 minutes to. So after going for some time, I contacted GA California and Toronto and opened up my own chapter in our community, which is the first ever. I started working heavily with some of the government programs here. And when I say heavily, no one's going to change everything in an instant. There is too much money that is driven by the profits that they get out of online gambling and out of gambling as a whole, sports betting, all of it, to provide, distinctive change in an instant. So started opening conversations, dialogues, hoping that someone with lived experience such as myself can make a difference and be someone who can recover very loudly, as it is very hard for a lot of us to do so. We've suffered in silence and we recover in silence. It takes a lot. We can lose our reputation, we can lose our jobs, we can lose everything again in an instant if we make it public of what we did and who we became in our addictions. But for me, I feel like a guinea pig. I feel like I became the worst version of myself. And today, with the ability to help people every day, with the ability to make active change in my community and hopefully in my country and my provinces, I can be someone who allows people who were walking in my former footsteps to change their path. And really that's what's helped me recover. I'm 2 days away from 6 months, and that's early in my recovery, but the things I've done and who I've become, I never could have imagined. And I'm meant to be here. Would I change what I did? Absolutely. Would I change who I've become? Absolutely not. I have nothing but gratitude for where I am now, and to some instances, I have to reflect and realize that I owe that to the bad person I was.
Megan, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story. I think there was a lot that people can relate to. And if you're in the audience and you want to hear another story of someone battling a gambling addiction and coming out on the other side, then check out this video. Let's keep getting better together, one day at a time.